Okay, make sure you're in fellowship as we're again looking at Jacob's battle with his sin nature and his reunion with his brother Esau. Previously, the night before, he had his wrestling match with God. He walks away from that with renewed courage, taking his family with him to the southern side of the river Jabbok, waiting for eventually to meet Esau. He looks up, and now he sees Esau coming with 400 men, an army, a small army with him in this respect. And when he does, once again, his eyes of the flesh trump the doctrine of his soul, and he gets under sin fear. And he immediately takes his immediate family, his mothers and children, and he divides them up into three different levels, with the two maids out front, along with their children, Leah next with her kids, and last but not least, Rachel and Joseph. And again, this is all energy of the flesh on his part, as we've been dealing with. He is seeking to once again trying to lessen any loss that he has conjured up under his own SGA that he might experience from his brother Esau, whom the last he heard from some 20 years before was he was going to kill him. But as we have noted and pointed out, it's all perceived. This is not the way it's going to come down the pike of his brother, and these verses make it very clear, of his brother being hostile towards him. And it looks at the nature of the sin nature in his creativeness to convince the believer, and here we are dealing with a positive, adjusted believer, Jacob. I know a lot of commentaries want to just ridicule him almost in regards to his fear, etc., as if they would have done any better. But he has just been changed, had his name changed by Yahweh in the wrestling match to Israel, denoting a mark of maturity, as it was with Abraham and Sarah. And he is just nothing less than, or more than, an adjusted positive believer dealing with his test in life, of which he's got to battle the sin nature. The battle, the inward battle in regard to the believer priest is ongoing in regards to our lives. And it is no different for a positive, adjusted, mature believer than it is for any other believer in that respect. Apart from the fact that it is a positive, adjusted believer, and in which we have the example in regards to Jacob, that is willing to hang in there in spite of it all, to persevere, and to not chunk doctrine, not reject doctrine. He maintains his frame of reference, but continue to pass, to deal with this test, to face this test, and to hold in there in regards to doctrine. And eventually he will come out on the end of deliverance, as it will be, in regards to the test in and of itself. And here, his fear in taking these his immediate family, and what we're dealing with, his fear is not so much, and not to say that it's not at all, is not so much his own life, which he has that fear. But his greater fear, the deeper root of fear, is in regards to his own family, his wives and children in that respect. And that's brought out earlier in regards to the prayer that he shot up that we pointed out in that respect. And now the fact that with Esau coming after he arranges his family in their parade fashion, if you will, he now puts himself between the family and Esau coming towards him. And he's done what he can do under energy of the flesh, mostly, in regards to trying to hand a handout and an act of contrition in regards to Esau, with the presents that he sent out with the animals, now having his family in order in this respect, obviously putting Joseph and Rachel at the very back end to give them the greatest opportunity for escape if Esau determines to be aggressive and attack in that respect. He's done all that he can. But at the same time, one of the more ironic aspects in regards to his fear is that he fails here to truly trust God in his promise that he would provide for him his progeny to carry on the covenant promise. And it's like he needs to help God to protect his progeny. See, that's what's going on here in regards to this, to basically give you a general overview of what's going on. And when it comes to push to shove, Jacob steps out and he goes out now to meet his brother. And he doesn't know exactly what impact his previous preemptive presence had on him. But either way, he makes application and he puts himself between Esau and between his immediate family to now meet Esau. And we're at point 34, page 4 of our notes. Verse 3 in our notes. The subtle clue now that he has remustered courage. And this is the way it is in the Christian life. I don't care what anybody else may try to tell you. It is a constant struggle, a constant battle, day in, day out, in regards to our sin nature. And when we deal with tests in life, and we face our tests in life, it is a mixture of getting into the sin nature, praying for the positive, the just, mature believer, praying in regards to reamp our courage, in regards to the test, faith resting in that respect, making application, filling in the blanks in regards to the test in and of itself. And that's the way tests end up being. They're not going to, generally speaking, unless the test is just terse, very short, something of that nature, our general tests in life are not going to be perfectly handled in regards to our Christian life. But the positive, just believer, that's the believer that appeals to God's grace with rebound, with prayer, and continues to persevere and hang on to God's directive and geographical will for them in spite of what their STA is doing to them otherwise in this situation. And here, Jacob's STA trend is fear, as we have pointed out, and he has let the fear get a hold of him again, but it's not dominating him now at this point in time. And point 34, the subtle clue that he has remustered courage after the fact, after getting his energy of the flesh activity of his family arranged there. The subtle clue that he has remustered courage after the fact is seen now in his initiation of the reception, coming near to his brother. In other words, he his brother coming up, obviously they came to a point, they stopped, and Jacob now takes the initiative to approach his brother. And that's another subtle clue he has some fear for his life, but his real fear is what's behind him. It's Bible doctrine and not being fulfilled. That's what it all boils down to. God's promise will not be fulfilled on his part. But anyway, the subtle clue that he's remustered courage, point 34, after the fact, is seen his initiation of the reception, coming near to his brother, having bowed down to the ground 7 times. The phrase near to his brother, Nagash Adok, bowed down to the ground 7 times, Chuk Eretz Sheva Pam. 35, now bowing down 7 times was the act of respect of a vassal to an overlord. Now, in the 20 years while Jacob's with his uncle Laban, Esau has been pretty busy himself. He has created himself a small kingdom. And he is obviously the king or the overlord in regards to that kingdom. And to bow down before one of such position 7 times was common. That's recorded for us in the Hermana letters that circulated around 1360 to 1332 BC tablets, of which the language is written on. It's written in Akkadian and is heavily colored by an early form of Canaanite. So that's an external source that is a pretty good reference in regards to this situation. So that kind of leaves open here the question now, is this bowing down, that's what you got to ask, is bowing down, is he simply paying respect to Esau in regards to his position, or is this, if you will, another kind of cowardly act, an act of contrition, on his part? So 36, the writer here, Moses, leads us for the reader's conclusion at this point, whether Jacob's act of bowing was simply expected courtesy for his brother's position, or a further act of contrition seeking to appease his brother of the past. He's been in and out of fellowship a number of times. Where's he at now? In this part of his of actions here towards his brother. And really, is not clear one way or the other. Since he's been going back and forth, he's now mustered up the courage, I'm going to go meet Esau. So what's his activity? What does that revolve around? And it's left blank for a purpose, I believe. This is what I'm getting out of this. 37, the reality. Here's the reality. Whether Jacob was in fellowship or not at this point takes back seat to the fact that the test is essentially over. That points to the fact that tests all have ultimately a deliverance. And one may be apply at a high level during certain parts of the test. They may fail at different parts of the test. But eventually, God's promise is God will not give us a test any greater than we can handle. And who will always provide a way out of the test, an ultimate deliverance in this regards, under the doctrine of testing. And for Jacob, this last act of bowing down is his test, technically speaking. Because Esau sees him and he does the dash towards him like it's his long-lost brother that he's loved his whole life, and he can't believe he's finally with him again. With no air of hostility whatsoever in regards to his person. So, coming up to the test, this brings us to that point in the test where the test now is essentially over. So, 38, this illustrates that there is always ultimately a deliverance from the believer's test, no matter how they may have throughout fielded it. Whether you fail it or whether you pass it. Ultimately, the test is going to end eventually. It's going to be over, and God will fulfill His promise to deliver from the test. So, 39, the question is, how well did we redeem the time? Did we ultimately, overall, pass the test? Could we have done better? Yes. Could we have done worse? Sometimes, yes. Yeah. But how did you hold up through the test overall? And how much time did you stay in fellowship, was praying about it, versus the isolated sinning that your sin nature tries to put a stranglehold on in regards to you capitulating completely in regards to the test? Ephesians 5, 15 through 16. This is so far removed in regards to how the Christian life is so often presented out there in denominationalism, that if you're not near to perfect in regards to handling your test in life, and things of this nature, somehow you're less spiritually. Somehow you're not mature. Well, what do they do with Jacob? God just said, you're mature. And again, he's capitulating under his sin nature. See? And it all points to grace as it underwrites of living the Christian life, trying to live God's perfect plan with the sin nature. The consistent up and down battle that we have, being in fellowship and out of fellowship. And then trying to deal with our test. And when it comes down to it, what you look at and what you will be rewarded for at the bema seat was the time you spent in fellowship dealing with that test. And the whole point is what's driven home in regards to Jacob and his example is that whatever time he garnished for SG3 out of this, the big point is he never gave up. He never abandoned God's plan over this. See? And it's how much time do we redeem the time? Ephesians 5:15. Therefore, be careful how you walk. Conduct your Christian life. All the decisions that you make in regards to maintaining the priorities of God's plan for your life and implementing it in all the other activities you are involved with in regards to living life in general. Not as unwise men, but as wise. Don't let human viewpoint take precedent. It must be determined by a divine viewpoint in regards to the decisions that we make. And the divine viewpoint says we all stumble in many ways. When you do, you have the rapid recovery system to rebound. You rebound, you pray about it, and you seek to maintain your priorities and deal with your life otherwise in that regard. And then literally verse 16 in the Greek, redeeming the time because the days are evil. To redeem the time is the time spent in fellowship and persevering for the believer that expects maximum blessing and to be the contender for the prize, persevering, making the maturity adjustment, and holding to the end. See? And all of us are going to have those increments of the bonfire at the bema seat and SG3 for hanging in there with it. But the ones that hang in to the end, they're the ones that are going to have maximum blessing. They're the ones going to be prize contenders, the candidates for the wreath in this respect. Now, if you think you can handle all your tests perfectly, well, my hat's off to you. You're way beyond me. Maybe you ought to be teaching this class. I've seen it. I've been around some very, very, very positive people a great portion of my life. It's not possible. People are going to fail, see. Again, I'm not saying there's not some test that people may hit it and fly through, at least appear that they're flying through with flying colors. But then you don't know how many times they're rebounding as overtly they're looking like they've really got it, their act together. So, anyway, most of you know what I'm talking about, if not all of you. This whole mentality of being perfect in the Christian life is bunk. This human viewpoint is nothing but self-righteousness. So, Jacob is now at a point. His test is essentially over. Whether he finishes it in fellowship or out of fellowship, it now becomes moot. Did he garnish any SG3 and did he deal with the test, persevere through it otherwise? Yes, he did. So 40 for Jacob is in a mixture of being in fellowship and out of fellowship, the filling of the Holy Spirit, but always persevering, holding to God's grace. Yeah, he walked out with a limp for the rest of his life as a reminder for not dealing with this STA. at a level necessary in that regards. But nevertheless, even then, he hung in there with it. That didn't stop him. When God put his hip out of joint, he kept on wrestling. He put up with the pain. He recognized it. That is the point that he recognized, this is God I'm dealing with. He could kill me. He's gracing me out just by hurting me. Divine discipline. Part of God's grace package, you see. So, yeah, most people, most preachers, commentaries look to Abraham and Isaac, you know, as being the great examples of positive believers that are really adjusted. And Jacob tends to take a back seat, it seems like, in regards to the commentaries, at least at this point in time in his life. Not that they don't recognize him overall. I beg to differ. He's just a normal positive believer that is dealing with his sin nature and trying to keep doctrine before him. And overall, he shows success because he perseveres and God delivers in a great way. You know, it could have ended up, even slightly less than what happens. I mean, his brother could have come in. They could have maybe argued it out or whatever. His brother could have had some hostile or at least some hesitancy in regard to embracing him. But he doesn't. The deliverance is unbelievable. When you think about it, his brother goes, Esau runs to meet him. See? So, to me, this all points to the fact, it points to and gives evidence to what I'm claiming is that overall he passed his test. He just had his ups and downs going through it. So 41, the conclusion of Jacob's test has an unexpected ending as, quote, Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. Ruth Esau, Lamakar, Wa, Shabak, Wa, Nagal, Tasawar. Tasawar. 42, all of Jacob's fears were for naught. All of his fears were for naught. How many times have probably every one of us been in that situation? Your SCA has convinced you that this is the way it's going to happen. And it ends up being something completely opposite of that. See? He's afraid that Esau was going to hold this grudge for these 20 years. Still had intentions to kill him. At least attack and take over his possessions, anything of that nature. Your STA is very creative in conjuring up possibilities of what might happen in life. Well, get your mind off what might happen in life. Get your mind on what's going on with Bible doctrine in your life. See? Get your eyes off the physical. Get your eyes on the spiritual. You hear somebody, maybe in a wreck or in a storm or tornado, and people that you know in the vicinity, and you get under fear, oh, what about them? And find out that they didn't get touched, after the fact. And I just flimsy excuse, but flimsy example, but there it is. See, it happens. So you got to recognize that about your STA. It will create hypothetical situations in your thinking to get you distracted from not trusting Bible doctrine and God in your life. That His promises are not true, will not carry through at the very minimum if you don't help Him out a little bit here. The old adage, God helps those that help themselves. That's BS. He came here to help those who couldn't help themselves. Now, there was no hesitation in Esau's actions once he recognized his long-lost brother. To think that maybe he has some underlying motive here. And there is no indication of that whatsoever in any of the interaction that we see between these two brothers once they get back together. 44, this demonstrates the principle that God can make even those who may be against us very amiable toward us in a situation such as this. God's in control of life. And He can actually put it into the minds of people through circumstances, situations, other means, you know, that only God can come up with often, to get people that may otherwise be antagonistic to you to pull in their horns. Proverbs 16:7. When a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, He makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Jacob's ways was pleasing to the Lord. Esau was at peace with him. When you apply that verse to Jacob's situation. See? Not always. You know, there may be the test. But it's something that you can look at. God can put thoughts in people's brain computers. For Esau, his initial anger towards his brother was his lost opportunity of getting the blessing by his father Isaac and inheriting all that his father otherwise possessed in that regards. 20 years has passed. He's been out in the cosmos as an unbeliever. The cosmos has done him right. He's gained position of power, has a small kingdom, has everything that he needs. And all of a sudden, that thing that was an issue that created all that anger to begin with is gone by the wayside. He can care less. Of course, that's his attitude towards the covenant to begin with. He could care less in regards to what God had. See? What he wanted was for himself. So you never sell God short of what He can do and interact on the believer's behalf, even with those, whether it's at work, at school, other situations we might find ourselves in, people being antagonistic. He can go in there and cause them to pull their horns in ways you can't even imagine. And here is pretty outstanding that Esau has had this complete 180 in regards to his attitude towards Jacob. So 45, the dreaded encounter resolved itself through no efforts by Jacob. Nothing that he's done to this day did anything to affect Esau's attitude. And you may say, well, what about those presents that he sent? Well, we'll deal with that when Esau goes, what about those presents that you sent? What's that all about? See? No, it wasn't that. All Esau knows, I'm going to get to see my brother Jacob. And one of the important things that really opened up to me a lot in regards to this is recognizing the confusion in between the original messages between Jacob and Esau, where Jacob told the servants to say to my brother that I hope to find favor in him. That word favor could mean I hope I find help for deliverance in regards to all of this company. And that's why Esau has 400 men with him. He's come to help him. See? Verse 46, the reader is not here told why Esau was so receptive. To illustrate the unseen workings of God in the background on the believer's behalf. We can't see what God's doing back there. You don't know what's going on in people's lives otherwise, see. He may distract them with something that gets, if they're hostile towards you or whatever, distract them with something else that completely absorbs their attention and they forget about you. No. It can be anything. So, that again is left unstated, and that illustrates God invisibly in control of circumstances and situations in people's lives. So 47, both brothers respond in like emotionally as, quote, they wept, or Hebrew, baka, end quote, out loud without inhibition. That word, verb wept is the same verb used as Hagar with Ishmael when she thought he was going to die back in chapter 21, verse 16. And then Abraham weeping over the death of Sarah in Genesis 23, 2, as well as other places. So, for Esau, you can picture the weeping. He's just really happy to see Jacob. You can imagine the weeping on Jacob. It was his emotional release, man. Depending on how much of that he's still carrying. All right, so 48. The ice between the two brothers is broken at this point. As spiritual clarity will again eventually reign with Jacob in acknowledgement of God's grace, as we will see in verses 10 and 11. But first, we have verses 5 through 7 and 8 and 9. Verse 5, and he lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, who are these with you? Esau doing the speaking. Wow, consecutive, a verb to lift, cow in perfect third masculine singular, nasa, N-A-S-A. Sign is direct object. His eyes is the common, both dual noun, construct, third masculine singular suffix, ayin, A-Y-I-N. And saw, while consecutive, a verb ra'ah, cal, perfect third masculine singular, to see, R-A-A-H. Sign is direct object again, what he has seen. The women is the definite article with the common feminine plural noun, absolute, Ishashah, I-S-H-S-H-A-H. And the children, while conjunction, sign of direct object, are noun, common masculine plural, absolute, Yeled, Y-E-L-E-D. And said, while consecutive, and our verb to say, typical verb, Amar, A-M-A-R, cal perfect third masculine singular. Who is your interrogative pronoun? Me, M-I-Y. These, are these, understood, adjective, both plural, Ella, E-L-L-E-H. With you is your preposition, Lamed, with the second feminine singular suffix. Feminine suffix denotes the choice of relationship that comes from the soul where volition resides. So he, Jacob, said, you gotta keep tabs on who the subject is and the verbs. While consecutive, Amar repeated, cal perfect third masculine singular, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. The definite article, again our noun Yeled, for children, common masculine plural. Whom is your relative pronoun Asher? A-S-H-E-R. Graciously is your cow perfect third masculine singular verb Canaan, C-H-A-N-A-N. God, common masculine plural absolute noun Elohim, E-L-O-H-I-Y-M. Your servant, sign and direct object, common masculine singular noun, construct, second masculine singular suffix, Eved, E-B-E-D. And then we see a whole bunch of genuflecting. Monkey see, monkey do. Dad goes and bows. Here comes the parents and children bowing. Then the maids came near with their children, they bowed down. Verse 6. Wow, consecutive came near is your cow and perfect feminine plural, Nagash, N-A-G-A-S-H. The maids, definite article, are now Shiphaka, S-H-I-P-H-E-C-H-A-H, common feminine plural. Then you had the pronoun, third feminine plural, henna, H-E-N-N-A. Intensive here for emphasis, they themselves and their children, wow, conjunction. Common masculine plural, construct third feminine plural, suffix, yaled again. Then our verb to bow down with the wow consecutive, hith pile, reflexive, and perfect third feminine plural, chu, C-H-U-H. In verse 7, and Leah likewise came near with her children, and they bowed down. Wow, consecutive, again, same construction words here, to draw near, to approach, cow, perfect, imperfect, third feminine singular, Nagash, N-A-G-A-S-H. She drew near, Leah, proper, then you have the conjunction, Gom, also, Leah, likewise, proper noun, Leah, and her children. Common masculine plural construct with third feminine singular suffix, yaled. And they bowed down, wow, consecutive, hith pile, imperfect third masculine plural, chu. And afterward, Joseph came near with Rachel and they bowed down. You have the wow conjunction, followed with the adverb akar, A-C-H-A-R, and after. Our verb again to come near, nagash. Nifal, perfect third masculine singular. Proper noun, Joseph. Wow conjunction, proper noun, Rachel. And they bowed down, chuh. C-H-U-H. His pile, third masculine plural. All right, rereading the verses here. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children, and he's Esau, lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, who are these with you? So he, Jacob, said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Verse 6, and the maids came near with their children, and they bowed down. And Leah likewise came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterward, Joseph came near with Rachel, and they bowed down. Now says verses 5 through 7. 1, with the reunion of two brothers being so affectionate on Esau's part, it becomes clear that Jacob's life is no longer in danger. Okay, so Esau's immediate reaction, throwing himself on Jacob, hugging his neck basically, like a long lost brother, crying. They both break out crying. One thing that Jacob can relax about, well, doesn't look like my brother's out to kill me. So that part of the test becomes clear to him. So 2, at this point in the narrative, the reader might conclude that Jacob recognizes that God has fulfilled his promise for protection in answer to his prayer back in 32:11. Where he stated, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him lest he come and attack me, the mothers with their children. So at this point in time, you might think, well, Jacob, all right, now Jacob's cool. You know, he's relaxed. Fear's out the window. Esau ain't going to kill me. 3, however, the story's not over yet. However, not until further conversation commences between the two brothers does the narrative explicitly disclose Jacob being completely oriented to God's grace in that vein. That doesn't come until verses 10 and 11. As he states, Esau, I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. Oh, wait. Wrong. Wrong chapter. I'll get there. And Jacob said, it's all those drugs from years back. Sometimes I lose focus. And Jacob said, verse 10, no, please, as the preceding context, Esau declines the offer of the present of the animals. But anyway, Jacob said, no, please, if now I found favor in your sight, verse 10, then take my present from my hand. For I see your face as one sees the face of God. We'll deal with all that. And he received me favorably in grace. Verse 11, please take my gift which has been brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me because I have plenty. Thus he urged him and he took it. In those two verses, he clearly articulates there, but not until then, that he is completely oriented now, God has completely and totally graced him out on this thing. So you got to deal with what's in between. So for the time span between the brothers' initial reception and Jacob's proclamations in verse 10 and 11 introduce an unexpected twist to the ending of the test itself. 5, that is, in Jacob's mind, there remains doubt as to Esau's full intentions. 6, in other words, though his life seemingly is out of danger, he remains concerned about Esau's intentions as to possibly confiscating his property and family in spite of relenting from taking life. In his mind, that possibility still exists. Okay, he's not going to kill me. Oh, what does he want? What does he want? Maybe he wants my property, my family, as restitution. Seven, he only concludes an answer to his prayer in part, that is, for himself. Hopefully, you can see within your own FCA how this kind of stuff works in your life. Your own STA. He prayed for himself and for his family. Esau made it clear he's not going to kill Jacob. Okay, that part of the prayer is answered. But there's still my family to consider. See? And the STA keeps on nagging him, keeps on picking at him. And it brings out another level in regards to the fear that he is experiencing. So at this point in time, he only concludes an answer to his prayer in part, that is, for himself. 8, the reader is to remember that Jacob does not yet know Esau's take on the previous presents offered in his act of contrition back in 32:13 and following. For the animals, the parade of animals that he said in waves to him. Well, what do you think about all that? It's going to come up here in a couple of verses after this one, after these verses. So, 9, this fact will be discussed in the following verses of 8 and 9. 10, the situation remains. Maybe Esau is glad to see him, yet only spared his life, thinking all that Jacob has is for the taking now. Maybe he's just happy because he saw these presents and Jacob wants to give me all this stuff. Trying to second judge, second guess things in life. Levin, so what we have in this example is the SCA continuing to conjure up more hypothetical fears, actually causing the effect of the test to transcend its design conclusion. The design conclusion and God's evidence that he's delivering him from this test was his brother in an unexpected fashion to go out and throw himself at him in joy and happiness to see him. Test over, but not with Jacob. Why? Because he still holds on to to part of his sin grid fear in regards to this. And now he's continued to extend the self-induced misery that he's put on himself to begin with, even beyond the design part of the test of it being over, by continuing to not trust God completely, fully, 100% in regards to his promise to protect him and his progeny. And now he is trying to judge his brother Esau otherwise. And he may say, well, I can understand that being who Esau is in his previous comments. Well, maybe you can. Does that give you an excuse not to faith rest? So 12, he retains self-induced inner turmoil here as repercussion for not, quote, fully, end quote, faith resting. Yeah, you can apply in part. You can overcome some fears, but there may be other aspects of the STA fear that you're still having to deal with, to show you the multifaceted sophistication and level that the STA operates in. So 13, Jacob here shows lack of trust as a result of sin fear. He doesn't yet trust Esau, parallel in his failure to yet completely trust God. 15, yes, he may not be afraid overtly in the normal sense of the word, but fear still nags him in the most subtle of ways. 16, in this test we have seen panic fear, the immediate knee-jerk reaction, emotional overload, dividing the companies in two, that type of stuff. Fear as a result of doubt, because he didn't completely believe in regards to God's plan, having doubt, not exercising faith in its fullest sense. And now we see fear from failure to trust. Trust and doubt obviously are somewhat synonymous, but there is a difference. You can doubt someone in regards to certain aspects of life, but yet trust them otherwise. See? But often doubt and trust go hand in hand. Or doubt, mistrust go hand in hand. So his failure to trust Esau, following through and maintaining what he's expressed to him welcoming him with open arms with no animosity towards him whatsoever, reflects his failure to trust God still in regards to the situation, mostly as it comes about in regards to his family and children, which is the next section that we deal with, and it will come, if you don't see it yet, it will come clear as we go through there. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, to enlighten us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.